Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Men Podcast. I'm Demi Wright, and if you haven't already, don't forget to join us on Instagram at mem.cast for a weekly question of the week. This week, we have Dr. Francesca Hurd. Hi, Francesca.
Hello.
She's a infectious disease and microbiology registrar in the East Midlands. So thank you so much for joining us this week. And this week, we're going to be talking about helminth infections. So it's one of the more obscure topics that may pop up in the MRCP exams. So it's well worth knowing what the tips and tricks to recognizing these things are. So we'll get into it now. So Francesca, what do we mean when we refer to helminth infections?
Firstly, thank you so much for having me on this week. And I thought I'd give an overview about helminth infections, as it's a topic I find really interesting, but it can be a little bit confusing if you just dive into it straight away. The terminology used in this field can be a little bit confusing, but helminth is a broad term used for parasitic worms that can infect humans. But there are many different types of helminth infections, and their prevalence varies depending on geographical location and host factors. But basically, helminths can cause a variety of clinical syndromes, but most commonly infect the GI tract, or they start off infecting the GI tract due to the nature of how the infection is acquired. But they can cause pathology in other organ systems, including biliary tract, respiratory tract, skin, eyes, and brain as well.
Right. Okay. And how do you classify them?
So there are various classification systems, and as I said, there are various terms used for each helminth, including colloquial and scientific names, so it is easy to get confused. For the purpose of MRCP exam, it is easiest to remember the two main types of helminths, and these are the ones that you will be examined on mostly. So roundworms, and these are also called nematodes, and that's the scientific name for them. And flatworms, and these have two main classes which are relevant to human infection. The one subtype is called tapeworms, of which their scientific name is cestodes, and another subtype is called flukes, or trematodes is their scientific name. So essentially you've got roundworms and you've got flatworms, and then within flatworms you have two types. As I go along, I will include some colloquial names that you might see, because some colloquial names for them are well known, and they can aid memory and pattern recognition in exam questions.
That's really helpful. So you mentioned flatworms are tapeworms and flukes. Does that have further subclassifications?
Yeah, I'll go through some of the main ones that you'll need to know about for the exam and also clinically as well. So as I said, we have flatworms, and within those we have tapeworms, also called cestodes, and trematodes, which are also known as flukes. So within tapeworms, so these are called tapeworms because they've got long, thin, flat bodies which resemble tape, hence the name. And the main types that you may come across is taenia, and there are two subtypes of taenia, and it's colloquially known as the pork or beef tapeworm, and taenia is the organism that causes cysticercosis. And another main type is echinococcus, which is the cause of hydatid cyst. And there are some lesser known examples of tapeworms, including fish tapeworm and dwarf tapeworm. And there are a couple of facts about these that I'll say later on that they like to ask in MRCP questions.
Okay.
And then within trematodes with flukes, you've got a few ones which are quite well known and that you'll need to know about. So Fasciola hepatica is a liver fluke. Schistosoma, with three main subtypes that you'll need to know about, including Mansoni, Japonica, and Haematobium, which is a cause of schistosomiasis. Paragonimus is also known as a lung fluke. You've got Opistorchis, which is also known as Chinese liver fluke, and Filaria, which causes filariasis.
Okay. Those are quite a lot of worms and, you know, specific names. How do you remember all of those?
I think for me, the key is kind of remembering the clinical syndrome, and it kind of goes along with it, because once you read about them and you learn about them, you will find that some of them cause quite characteristic clinical syndromes. Yeah. But for the purpose of MRCP, you will kind of just need to know key facts. And as I've mentioned, the ones I've said, they are the most common ones, but even within those, the main ones they'll kind of be asking you about are things like schistosomiasis, hydatid cyst, as they're the kind of more common syndromes that maybe a general kind of medic would come across.
Yeah. Okay, so those were the flatworms. What about the roundworms?
Yeah, so roundworms, they're scientifically known as nematodes. They are called that because they've got a round cylindrical body. And there are a few examples of roundworms which a lot of people will have already heard of. So Strongyloides is one of the most common ones. Hookworms, which have scientific names that are quite long, but Nicator americanus is one of the ones that people may have heard of. Ascaris is also a type of roundworm. And this is one that people may know for being quite characteristic to look at. It's very large, it can be meters long, and it's the when you see a picture of a very long roundworm, it's often an Ascaris. Trichuris is a whipworm, and that's one that they also like to ask about in MRCP, so that's worth knowing about. And Enterobius is also called pinworm, and this is the one that you'll hear about commonly affecting children, causing pruritus anae, so that's
Yeah.
one to know about as well.
Okay. So with all of these different worms, is it something that you see or manage commonly?
So in my specialty, we do see helminth infections commonly, and typically in the evaluation of someone in clinic with gastrointestinal symptoms, for example, or in the workup of a patient with a xenophilia with the kind of context of a relevant travel history. We do also see patients with liver cysts caused by hydatid disease, as I mentioned before. We do occasionally diagnose helminth infections in unwell return travelers and in people living with HIV.
Okay, so it's important for us as medics to be thinking about these as potential infections when we do have, people coming in, traveling, the unwell, and considering it along with the more common pathogens that we typically think about.
Yeah, definitely. And particularly in kind of a workup for xenophilia, which, kind of spans a few different specialties, and also in workup of patients with non-specific gastrointestinal symptoms as well.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So you say it's something you come across commonly. What is the prevalence, would you say?
So as we've got so many different types, the prevalence does vary, but the ones I've mentioned in the nematode group, such as Strongyloides, Ascaris, hookworm, and whipworm, they are some of the most common helminth infections. And the WHO estimates that they affect up to 24% of the world's population. So these are really common, particularly in sort of resource-limited settings. So knowing about these is really important. And as I've mentioned, some helminths have quite specific geographical locations, so the prevalence of those will vary. But as you read about them, you will become more familiar with this.
Yeah, okay. And so geographics is going to determine how common you might see one or the other, but what are some of the major risk factors that would be associated with these infections?
So generally, in terms of the infections I've mentioned just recently, the nematode type infections with Strongyloides, Ascaris, hookworm, these are often known as soil transmitted helminth infections. So in areas that lack sanitation, these helminth eggs can contaminate the soil. So if you're eating produce which has come from that soil and it's not been adequately peeled or washed or cooked, then you may ingest the worm eggs. And you can also ingest them from contaminated water sources in that environment as well. And human ingestion of an intermediate host may come into play. So when you're thinking about things like the fish tapeworm, so part of the parasite life cycle is sometimes in another organism, such as a small fish or a crustacean. So if a human ingests that, then you ingest the parasite and then the development will carry on inside you. So you become an accidental host. Sometimes some of the infections can be transmitted through direct penetration of the skin. So people may have heard of hookworm. A risk factor for this can be walking barefoot on soil because the worm penetrates directly through the skin on the foot. And this is also relevant for schistosomiasis as well. So a person goes into the freshwater environment where the parasite lives. The parasite inoculates the skin of the normally of the foot or the leg because the person will be bathing. So that's one other route of transmission as well. And it's quite well known that Lake Malawi is a very well-known hotspot for schistosomiasis. So if anyone goes bathing there, make sure you're covered up.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, so, and then just in general, immunosuppression also increases the risk of infection and severe disease from helminth infections.
Yeah, okay. I mean, listening to those, it actually makes me feel a bit paranoid, about, walking barefoot anywhere. If you go in on the beach somewhere and you don't have all your shoes, I'm just like, ah, think about the worms.
Yeah. Wear flip-flops.
Yeah, okay. And so besides being pets, why is it important to identify these infections?
So it's important to identify helminth infections for a number of reasons. So firstly, obviously the symptoms, particularly gastrointestinal symptoms, can be quite troubling and distressing for people if you've got chronic diarrhea, etc. And also the passage of worms can be uncomfortable and very distressing. And so that's obviously one reason to try and identify the infection and treat it. And also most of these infections can, if the infection is chronic for a long period of time, they can cause chronic inflammation and sequelae as a result of that. Additionally, some helminth infections are actually carcinogenic. So schistosomiasis, one species of schistosoma called Schistosoma hematobium, which causes urogenital schistosomiasis. Chronic infection is linked to squamous cell carcinoma of the bladder. Yeah. And also the Chinese liver fluke that I mentioned earlier, called opisthocis or clonorchis, that can also cause cholangiocarcinoma as well. So you've got longer term risk factors as a result of the infection.
Right,
And
okay.
additionally, you may have morbidity from the nutritional effects of chronic infection, such as anemia from hookworm infection. And MRCP does like to ask about which species can cause B12 deficiency and pernicious anemia. And this is caused by the fish tapeworm called Diphyllobothrium. So that's also another long-term effect from infection.
Right, okay.
Strongyloides is also known to cause chronic malnutrition in children and can lead to sort of growth retardation and complications from that. And you also can see extraintestinal effects as well in some species. So that can lead to complications such as respiratory or CNS complications. And we'll come on to chat a little bit more about presentations like this later on.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Francesca. That was actually really helpful. As the topic helminth infections is pretty large, I thought it'd be best to divide the podcast into two. So that was a brilliant overview. So thank you so much, Francesca.
Thank you for having me.
So in our next podcast, don't forget to join us and we will go through the presentation, the investigation and management of the helminth infections. And to all our listeners, don't forget to follow us on Instagram at mem.cast for our weekly question of the week, and we'll see you next time.